calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Highly unlikely. Do you dig that sound? It's one of my favorites in the world. That old line, a bad day of fishing beats a good day just about anywhere else, is certainly true for me. I love the sound of that droning engine. The tang of the salt air, the squeal of the gulls, and maybe most of all, the feel, that feel of pitch and yaw, rock and roll, that says you're headed for adventure. No two fishing trips are ever the same. You just never know what's going to happen. We do love a good fish story, don't we? Jaws, Moby Dick, the old man in the sea. There's something about them. Have I got fish stories? Sure, loads. But if you extract the scales and fins, fish stories are really just people stories on the ocean with fish. And I've come across some crazy characters while fishing. I'll introduce you to a couple of them in a little bit. I vividly recall the first fish I ever caught. It was in Queens, New York, at a park called Flushing Meadow. Kind of disgusting name for a neighborhood or a park, isn't it?
Where do you live?
Flushing. Flushing Meadow was the home of two World's Fairs and the New York Mets and the U.S. Open, and it used to have a little stream that ran through it. My parents would take us over there in the summer for a picnic once in a while, find a grassy spot in the shade, and the old man would fire up a portable charcoal grill, and it was nice. And when I was 3, maybe 4, I got my hands on a little fishing rod. Somewhere is a picture of me fishing in a mud puddle, reeling in a wet newspaper. I may have been a little slow, or maybe I had a big imagination. Somewhere in Flushing Meadow was a small wooden footbridge over that stream, and I stood there with an unbaited hook for the longest time. I suppose to appease me or make me not look quite so pathetic, the old man took a piece of hot dog bun and squeezed it into a ball and pushed it onto the fish hook. Now, I was ready to fish. I don't know how much longer I stood there, but after a while I saw Mom and Dad shaking out the picnic blanket. It was time to go. That's when something started to tug on my line. The rod bent over. I started yelling, and my old man ran over to help me reel it in. Amazingly, I had caught a catfish. Now what? Nobody expected that. When I think back on that stream, it was the kind of stream where you'd think only mosquitoes and algae might survive. Yet, here was this catfish, as big around as your arm, with those crazy long whiskers. I wanted to make it a pet. I'm a pretty indulgent father to my kids, and I would have thrown that fish back. Only now do I realize how crazy indulgent my father was of me. Somewhere he found an empty coffee can. He filled it with water and stuck the fish, which by now had been named Salvatore. Stuck him in head first. At least 2/3 of Salvatore was sticking out of that can, but his head was submerged in water. I wonder what he was thinking. Could not have been good thoughts. We weren't too far from home, and by the time we got there, Salvatore was looking awfully tired. My brother and I ran upstairs and filled the bathtub. In went Salvatore. He seemed to revive for a while, but soon he was on his side. My brother and I crushed up an aspirin and mixed it in the water around his head. It didn't help. In another minute, Salvatore was belly up. Since Salvatore, I've never stopped fishing. People call it a sport. I don't think it is, any more than golf or darts or billiards. Although, if you hook a game fish, you'll know you've done some work. And plenty of guys have lost fingers with bigger fish. There was some guy who fought a billfish to a standstill, and just before boating him, the fish took one more leap and rammed his bill right through the guy's heart. The thing about fishing that no other pastime can equal is the mystery factor, at least while ocean fishing. Because you never know what's down there and what might chomp on your bait. The possibility of something weird or huge is always there. The same can't be said of hunting. You're not going to bag a wildebeest in the eastern Sierras. Unlike many activities, you can fish alone, and there's a lot to be said for that. It gives one the opportunity to ponder things, or just shut your brain down for a while. Every summer, my brother and dad and I would hit the Jersey Shore for some party boat fishing and leave Mom home with the dog. I think she looked forward to those respites from us. We'd go down to a town with the bucolic name of Point Pleasant, find a nice motel and check in. Then, off to some seafood joint for a big feed. Then we'd head for the honky-tonks on the boardwalk down in Seaside Heights. Wheels of Fortune, where you could win a black light poster or a Pepsi bottle with a stretched neck. I always wondered how they did that and why anyone would want one. Everywhere was saltwater taffy, a Jersey Shore specialty. We were more into the coconut chocolate patties. Those things could put a smile on your stomach. There was always something to grab you on that boardwalk at night. Gypsy palm readers, guys who would guess your weight or age. It was great. Next morning, we'd head for the docks before dawn, and that's where the show began. Competition was fierce, so they'd have guys with those big orange flashlights like they use on runways, and they'd be out on the road trying to wave you into their boat like carnival barkers. They'd brag about yesterday's catch, how many bluefish they took, and their secret spots, and so on. Then some smart aleck hired a couple of pointy chicks in heels and bikinis to wave flashlights, and their boats filled up in a hot minute. Of course, the girls were not on the boat, but men are easy, aren't we? Once aboard, you'd pay your fare and find a spot on the rail and tie up your rod. Then relax, because the ride to the fish was around a couple of hours. Out there in the Atlantic was a spot in the ocean they called the acid waters. At that time, there was a lot of confusion and misinformation about how they got their name and their look, and the look was weird. You'd be plowing through deep blue water, and then suddenly you'd see it on the horizon. Several square miles of water that was bright green. I mean like Gatorade. People said that when New York City demolished the Third Avenue elevated subway, they threw all the debris on dozens and dozens of barges and towed it out there, dumped it. Allegedly, it became a haven for the bluefish, which was what we were after. And the green color of the water is from rusting metal. Scrap metal is valuable. Why the hell would anybody go to the trouble of loading it on barges and then towing it miles out to sea to dump it? Turns out the story was a stupid myth. The real reason those waters looked as they did was it was a steady dumping ground for acid chemical waste from several lead companies. I suppose it was so far out to sea because it was technically beyond the 12-mile limit of United States law, so they weren't subject to legal action. The shit they were dumping must have been damn toxic to go to all that expense and trouble. And to think, I ate tons of fish that ate and lived in those waters. I'm amazed I don't glow in the dark. For whatever reason, all kinds of fish liked it there. And each day, dozens and dozens of boats would haul ass out there for the blue fishing, which was usually pretty fabulous. If you're not familiar with bluefish, they rarely exceed 20 pounds. Yet, a lot of big game fishermen claim that pound for pound, they are the best fighting fish in the world. I could easily believe that. In late summer and early fall, when they reach full size, you have to use 50-pound test line to reel one in. And they snap that line all the time. You also need a wire or cable leader near the hook, because they'll chomp through nylon or braided line like it's sushi. Blues run in schools, and there's rarely any weight difference among them because they are cannibals. If they can't find bunker or some other fish to eat, they'll chew the shit out of each other. They'll bite other fish for the hell of it, with no intention of eating it. They will bite surfers and swimmers, and legend has it that a downed pilot in the Mediterranean in World War II was eaten by school blues. So what do you do for that two-hour ride to the fishing grounds? Well, drink, of course. Seemed like everyone cracked a beer before shoving off, and by the time you got your line wet, plenty of fishermen were soused. Often, guys would get aboard loaded. They were usually still dressed from the previous night's clubbing. No doubt, at last call, some genius suggested a fishing excursion, and of course, it seemed like a perfect idea at the time. It was funny seeing guys in sport coats and fancy shoes on the boat. Usually, you didn't see them until the end of the day. They'd just sleep it off in the cabin, or they'd spend all day puking over the side. If the swells were 5 or 6 feet, that weeded out the landlubbers pretty quick. So sitting to my left was this grizzled old guy with a tackle box the size of a footlocker. I always wondered about those guys. They open the thing up, and inside is every piece of fishing gear ever made. This guy pulls from it an industrial, hospital-sized, brown glass bottle of Anacin. The thing looked ancient. Only shreds of the label remained. I felt bad for the guy. He must get a fuck ton of headaches. Then he uncaps it, puts it to his lips, and takes a long slug. As far as I know, they never made liquid Anacin. Odd way to store your booze, too, and it wasn't for stealth purposes. Nobody gave a shit when anyone was drinking. After he downed the booze, he chuckled to himself some private joke. He sounded like Aqualung when he laughed. The old guy was just weird. More on him later. A couple of bodies down the line was another odd dude, Jack. Jack was probably in his mid-40s, skinny, with a flannel shirt and a ruddy face. He'd been drinking since we left the dock, and he'd not brought his own. He was buying them from the boat, which they were happy to sell, and not cheaply. And Jack's pretty well loaded. And finally, when we're deep into the acid waters, the skipper cuts the engine and gives the horn a single toot. Drop your lines. There are many ways to catch bluefish. You can use a big shiny metal lure called a jig. Drop it straight down and reel it up fast. They'll snap at it on the way up. But on this day, we were drifting cut bait. Big hunks of greasy fish called moss bunker. I'm already paying out line to drift the bait. And sometimes you just have to wait until the school swoops in. And then all hell breaks loose. I look over at Jack, and he's holding one of the rods the boat's rented. They were always painted some garish color to discourage thievery, I guess. And I see Jack roll up his sleeves on his flannel shirt in prep for battling bluefish. And Jack's left arm looked like something out of a medical journal. It is literally skin and bone. Not an ounce of muscle on it from shoulder to fingertips. What's left of his hand and fingers are frozen into a permanent curl. I was immediately reminded of a terrific Stephen King short story. I think it was called The Mangler, and it was about some huge machine in an industrial laundry that was possessed by a malevolent entity, and the mangler would eat guys' arms and sometimes all of them. Jack looked like a mangler survivor. Now, I should mention something here. When bluefish bite, nobody ever says, "I got a bite." They say, "I got a hit," because that's what they do. They swim hard and crazy fast, and when they hit your line, it's hard to believe it's only a 20-pound fish. It feels like 100 pounds. And after reeling in just one, your arms will ache. The damn things have supernatural strength. And I'm wondering, how the hell is this essentially one-armed, drunken guy going to reel in one of these fish? How can he possibly even hang on to the rod if he gets a hit? Oh, my reverie was broken by a hit of my own. But it was an oddball. Usually when a school of blues streaks by, several guys get hits simultaneously. And this hit was not as hard as a bluefish. Well, no matter. I'm cranking away, and suddenly, my line feels slack, and I think, shit, I lost him. So I continue to reel, but I can still feel more weight on the line than just the bait. Finally, I get it alongside and see the head, and only the head, of a striped bass. When I hooked him, he was whole, but in transit something, one or more blues, or maybe a shark, took his body. That's part of the great fun of saltwater fishing. You just never know what fuckery will occur. I pull up the head, and behind me I hear, he's swilling liquid anison again, and is clearly amused by my mutilated catch. I unhook the head and bait up with a fresh chunk of bunker and start drifting, but suddenly guys are yelling, fish on! And zip, zip, lines are singing as they tighten up and people are walking fish all over the boat, trying not to let the hooked fishes weave through lines and cause a snarl. I reel in, not wanting to get ensnared in the mayhem. I look over at Jack. Incredibly, he's cradling the rod in his frozen, bony hand as he chugs a fresh beer with his good hand. Suddenly Jack's line goes taut, and the rod shoots through his frozen hand and skips across the water surface for a few yards before heading for Davy Jones' locker. After a few minutes, the hubbub dies down. A bunch of guys have bagged their fish, and there's a lull in the action. And the mate walks by, and Jack says,
excuse me, I need another beer and another fishing rod.
And the mate says, another rod? What's wrong with the one you rented?
It's gone.
Gone where? And Jack points over the side with his skeletal arm. The mate notices his arm for the first time. His eyes bulge, and he goes, holy shit, how the hell are you going to fish with that?
I can manage.
And now, the skipper is above on the bridge. He's been eavesdropping and looks down at Jack and says, no more beer for you, buddy. And the only thing you need to manage is coming up with $150 for the rod you lost. And Jack looks insulted.
$150? That was a used rod.
And the skipper says, not as used as that arm of yours. I'm trying hard not to belly laugh. Same as my dad and brother. We made several more stops, caught a bunch more bluefish. Then, at the last stop, the skipper gave a double toot. Time to go home. That's when guys bring their catch to the stern for two things. Weigh in for the pool, and to have them filleted. It's one of the best feelings in the world to ride on a boat headed for shore as you watch somebody cut your fish into what would be many fantastic meals. When you get within a few miles of shore, the gulls fly out to greet the boat. They know they can get their belly full of whatever they want, fish guts thrown over the side as well as unused bait. If you hold out a good-sized chunk of fish, they'll fly down and snatch it right out of your hand, even as that boat is banging along into a headwind at a good clip. They have big gullets and swallow enormous hunks of fish whole. Sometimes a marauder will fly in and snatch it from another bird. They'll have fights in midair over a morsel. I sat down to have a beer and watch the gulls wheeling. The anison-drinking geezer had his mammoth tackle box open and was laughing to himself as usual. His fingers were very busy. I'm wondering what the hell he's doing. He's got about 18 inches of line and a couple of hunks of bunker, and he's baiting a hook. I figure he must have been slugging Wild Turkey 101, and he's so hammered he doesn't realize that fishing is over. He looks up and smiles at me. Many teeth were missing. Then he starts twirling the baited hook like a keychain and throws it into the air. That's when I realize what the sick fuck was doing. He had a baited hook on each end of the line. And now one gull swoops down and gobbles the bait, and the other one gets the other hook, and they fly in tandem for about 3 seconds, And one peels off, and you see its gullet and tongue come out of its beak, and he tumbles downward to drown. And the other one flies off with a hook in his belly and a length of line with the first gull's guts dangling from it. The geezer can't stop laughing, and he calls out,
"Die, you greedy motherfuckers!"
Then he went back to his anison bottle. I went inside to take a leak and ponder what a cruel, sick world it could be and how filled it is with batshit crazy assholes. Later that evening, although exhausted, we mustered the energy for another big dinner and a stroll on the boardwalk. Since then, I've fished in a hell of a lot of other places, but nothing's yet beaten the Jersey Shore. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Check out this month's bonus episode, which also occurred on a fishing trip in the mysterious Catskill Mountains. There, in a weird little saloon, I witnessed a feat of magic that cannot be explained even by a number of professional magicians. To listen to it, go to thatlarryshow.com and click the Patreon button. At the show's homepage, you'll find lots more content, pictures, videos, and an archive of many episodes. Come back and see us this weekend for Sinner's Sunday. Until that time, take no shit.